When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
A mysterious teenage girl arrives in Lockhart, Texas, in the summer of 1988. Dressed all in black, the local kids think she's a little weird, but soon they're scared of her, not only for the frightening and disturbing things she says, but also for the power she seems to tap into during a disturbing session with a Ouija board. Yet that is only the start, because when an inquisitive fellow teen follows up this girl's claims, she makes a horrifying discovery in another town to the north. Prepare yourself for a gripping tale of true crime, the paranormal, and claims of devil worship. I'm Peter Laws, and tonight I give you Satanic Panic in Texas, the mysterious deaths of Tate Roland and Terry Trosper. Michelle Gomez works as a skip tracer. What is that? Well, it's a person who hunts down criminals who have skipped bail or committed other crimes. You might call her a bounty hunter. She's certainly been described that way in some publications. Yet despite her dramatic adult life, tonight we will explore a disturbing experience that she had as a teenager. An event that would lead her into claims of the supernatural, satanic cults, and murder. The story starts in August 1988 in Lockhart, Texas, which is about 20 minutes south of Austin. Michelle was living there at the time and was enjoying her life as a 17-year-old. She tended to hang out with boys, and they would ride around the town on their bikes playing baseball and climbing trees. One of the kids in that gang was called Eddie Rayner, and it was his cousin who came to stay in the summer of 1988. A person that would cause Michelle's life to take an incredibly strange and frightening turn. And her name was Mary. Mary Rayner was sent to stay with her cousin Eddie that summer to get away from some sort of trouble at her hometown. Michelle Gomez didn't know what that trouble was exactly, but she still found herself being drawn into Mary's orbit. You see, Mary and Michelle were the same age, 17. And Eddie and his mum thought that Michelle could show Mary around Lockhart. And the mum particularly thought that Mary needed a friend. Perhaps her and Michelle would hit it off. Michelle Gomez could vividly remember her first meeting with Mary. The first thing she noticed was that all of Mary's clothes were black. Along with her unbrushed black hair, she looked very different to the other girls in town. Now, wearing all black is hardly a big deal, but Michelle's mother did not like it. She heard about this new girl and wasn't happy with her daughter, Michelle, hanging out with someone who dressed only in black. But to be honest, regardless of Mary's fashion choices, Michelle simply struggled to connect with this new girl. She seemed gaunt and distant and, frankly, strange. So while Eddie's mom encouraged the two girls to hang out, Michelle actually avoided it as much as she could. But it was difficult to do that. And so one day, the whole group were over at Eddie's when Mary seemed to take an interest in one of the boys, a kid called Eric. Michelle kept asking questions about Eric, and Michelle just told her what she knew about him, including the fact that Eric went to the Catholic Church every Sunday. Now, Mary's reaction to this information was odd. She bristled at this news and looked visibly uncomfortable. She simply hated the idea of Eric being a churchgoer. But besides that, Mary was still drawn to Eric, and around that time, she started to use some of her own money to pay for pizza and video games. This meant the gang started spending more time with Mary at Eddie's house. And Michelle, being part of this gang, began to become quite intrigued by this girl. There was something different about her, something, frankly, a little unsettling. For example, on Halloween night of 1988, they gathered to tell spooky stories, as one often does at that time of year. Mary, however, was one of the best tellers of these stories. But more than this, her stories she told were actually scary. She had this knack of telling tales that were not fun anymore, but genuinely frightening. You know, the type of stories that follow you home and seep into your dreams. Well, Mary told those. But still, the boys in the gang could barely resist free video games and pizza. So they kept hanging out with this scary girl. And the more Michelle got to know Mary, the more Mary began to open up about her life. She started to say that she had moved from a town called Childress in Texas, which is about a 6.5 hours drive to the north of Lockhart. And Mary started telling her odd things about her hometown, saying that it was a weird town with weird people in it. Around that time, Mary would ask Michelle if she had ever done anything she felt very guilty about. This was an odd question to ask, and she didn't elaborate on what that meant. And Michelle doesn't seem to have probed that question too much. But she didn't have to ask much, because soon Mary was opening up and confiding in Michelle about her life back in Childress. And she would share some deeply unsettling information. As the two 17-year-old girls got to know each other, Mary opened up and admitted that she was having a great deal of trouble sleeping. Her nights were being plagued by nightmares. She said these horrible dreams were always about a group of people that she had known back in Childress, her hometown. Some of the weird people she had referred to earlier. Only this time she gave the group a name. She called them the Merchants of Death. Mary went on to talk about this group, but the weird part was that Michelle could not always tell if Mary was describing dreams or something that had actually happened, because when Mary shared these things, they were in such minute detail that Michelle began to wonder, maybe these aren't dreams at all. It sounds like she's talking about events that had actually happened, which made it all the more disturbing when she began to talk about what the group did. And so Mary had said she was part of the Merchants of Death group, and she said that the group would meet in an old house just outside of Childress. And she referred to this place as the Haunted House. She said that on the 24th day of each month, she would be taken to this old haunted house, and she would meet the group there. And she said that they would always bring a red light bulb to put into the porch light, illuminating the porch in a bizarre red glow. And then she told Michelle what they did inside the house each month, and it was shocking. Mary claimed that the group would perform sacrifices in the old haunted house. These sacrifices were usually an animal, but Michelle was becoming increasingly disturbed because Mary was starting to give the distinct impression that some of the sacrifices were human. Was this just another one of Mary Rayner's scary Halloween stories? Maybe. But something about these descriptions really intrigued Michelle Gomez, who, remember, in a few years' time would end up starting her life as a talented skip tracer and private detective, really. In fact, she would end up being called the best bounty hunter by Wired magazine in later life. And so she had a talent and an interest in inquiry and evidence. Well, back in 1988, Mary started to open up to Michelle more and more about the reason why she had driven 439 miles south to Eddie's house in Lockhart. She said the group she had been part of had murdered 2 boys and 2 girls. Mary was terrified that she might be the next victim. Michelle asked for more details, and Mary was open. She said that the haunted house that the group would meet in was owned by two parents, and she said that these parents were afraid that one of the boys in the group was going to tell the police about their crimes and sacrifices. Mary said that to stop this teenager doing this, these two parents had deliberately mowed this boy down with their car and killed him. And so one day, Michelle Gomez made a suggestion. Look, Mary, if you're really scared of this group, maybe you should try praying to God for help. Mary's response to this was fascinating. She said she didn't believe in God. Okay, fair enough, many people don't. But then she added an interesting detail. She said she didn't believe in God, but she definitely believed in the devil. Michelle asked her why would she reject the idea of God and yet accept the idea of the devil? And Mary simply said she believed in the devil because, quote, the devil makes things happen. Soon after, Michelle would witness firsthand what that meant when Mary called the gang round to use the Ouija board. Mary invited the boys to the attic of Eric's house because she wanted to have a Ouija board session with them. Michelle was invited too, and so she went along to see what might occur. They sat in that attic and placed their fingers on the planchette, this little pointer that moves to spell out words via the board's letters. And sure enough, as they started using the Ouija board, the planchette did begin to move under their fingers. I wonder if you've ever used a Ouija board before, you know, maybe at a party or some sort of rite of passage when you're a teenager. I personally have used the Ouija board many times when I was a teenager, although I haven't touched it since. And so, yes, I've had the experience of seeing the planchette move and even moving when I was the only one touching the board. Skeptics would argue that this means nothing, that any movement is the result of the ideomotor effect, the subconscious pushing of fingers. And the boys certainly treated this Ouija session like it was just some silly game. But Mary, she saw this Ouija board as a deadly, serious communication tool, and she told them all that it was a chance for them all to speak to a person called the Thane. The Thane, she said, was the leader of the Merchants of Death group. Mary said that she sometimes spoke to the Thane through the Ouija board and also used the board to speak directly to the devil. As she told this group all of this stuff, the giggles were beginning to die away. You see, the others were beginning to get a sense of fear. They were becoming scared at a change in atmosphere in that attic. There was something tense or unsafe starting to blossom there. The fear exploded, however, with what happened next. For a while, the planchette had been moving under their fingers of the group, which can be potentially explained by the ideomotor effect. But at one point, Mary was the only one with her fingers touching it. But then they watched her lift her fingers off the planchette, and it kept on moving on its own. Terrified, the entire group threw themselves back from the Ouija board, and they scrambled out of that attic. And that Ouija night was so terrifying that these boys refused to hang out with Mary after that, no matter how many pizzas or video games she bought them. But not Michelle Gomez. You see, by now, Michelle was just too intrigued by it all. Not only the frightening sight of the Ouija board moving by itself, but also the talk of this mysterious group up north, killing people in the name of Satan. And so with Halloween now gone, the early winter months of 1989 rolled around, and Michelle Gomez asked her mum a question. Would it be okay if that new girl, Mary Rayner, came over for a sleepover? Mrs. Gomez would not have anyone sleeping over in her house who only wore black. So she told Michelle that Mary would have to wear something of a different color to attend. If she agreed to that, then yeah, Mary could come and sleep under her roof. And so Mary got in touch with Michelle and told her the rules. And Michelle just asked, well, can I borrow some clothes from you? Because everything in my wardrobe is black. Anyway, the sleepover went ahead with Mary in loaned, colorful clothes. And something happened during that night that gave Michelle a frightening insight into her mysterious new friend.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Michelle and Mary hung out that night, and it came time to actually get some sleep. Rather than sleep on the bed, Mary said she wanted to sleep on the floor of Michelle's bedroom. And so she set quilts and pillows down to lie on. Yeah, that's fair enough. And yet after a few moments, Mary began grumbling on the floor. Michelle flitted her eyes open in the dark and just said, "Look, what's wrong? What's the problem?" Mary pointed at a glow coming from under the door. And she said the nightlight on the landing was really bothering her and that it would be impossible for her to get any sleep as long as that glow was coming into the room. Now, this is interesting because this wasn't just any standard nightlight. Mrs. Gomez, as you probably have realized already, was something of a religious woman. And so this nightlight on the landing was not just any nightlight. It was in the shape of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Now, if you're not sure what that is, basically Our Lady of Guadalupe is in reference to five apparitions of Mary, the mother of Jesus, which was said to have appeared before a man called Juan Diego in 1531. She holds a special place in the religious and cultural life of many Mexicans and Mexican Americans. Many Mexican-American women see the Virgin of Guadalupe as representing motherhood and femininity and sometimes even woman's struggle against oppression. Mary's mother kept this Guadalupe light not so much for its feminine symbolism, but because she specifically placed it there to ward off spiritual evil. Mary Rayner was lying there on Michelle's floor, seething at the symbol's glow. She hated this nightlight and was so visibly uncomfortable with it that she demanded that Michelle get out of bed and turn that nightlight off immediately. Then the two girls could be alone in the darkness. Michelle Gomez refused this demand, knowing that her mother would not take too kindly to this strange kid, normally dressed all in black, insisting that their protective religious symbols be taken down. The two teenagers got into a heated argument about this nightlight. It got so bitter that at one point, Michelle demanded that Mary should just leave right now and just go back to her cousin's house, trek through the streets. But this threat from Michelle seemed to calm Mary down. And so she turned away from the light of Guadalupe and changed the subject. Now she started talking about a dream/memory of the Merchants of Death group. And she said that the group normally met in that haunted house, you know, the one with the red light in the porch. But this time she said, in her dream or her memory, she saw the group standing in the woods, standing around a fire. And what she said next was horrible. Mary was somehow able to see these people around the fire and could tell who they were and see their faces. But she said, at this time, she hadn't actually been with them. She could just somehow see them there in the woods. She did remember, though, that she had been told that she would have to join the group later on the night in question, because she said she was instructed to wait in a Hardee's restaurant, that's a fast food place, to be picked up at midnight by one of the group. And so she went to that restaurant and waited, but her ride never came. But then another member of the group came to pick her up a short time after, only this second person had some shocking news. She said that one of their group, a boy of her age, 17, called Tate, was dead. Now, trigger warning, because this is disturbing. Mary was told that Tate had confessed to the group that he wanted to take his own life. You might think the adults would try talking him out of it. But Mary said that on that night in the fast food restaurant, she was told that instead of talk him out of it, the group decided to help him do it. It's a horrifying thought. Mary said that even though she hadn't been present at this killing, she had somehow been able to see it happen, and that the rope they used on Tate broke the first time, and so they did it again and it finally worked the second. Mary was told that Tate had been used as a sacrifice. I cannot imagine what it was like for Michelle Gomez to attempt to drift off to sleep that night at that sleepover with Mary Rayner lying there on the floor. Perhaps it suggests that Michelle's refusal to turn off the Guadalupe light wasn't only to avoid an argument with her mother. Maybe Michelle kept the light on for safety. She would certainly discover that she was in genuine danger from Mary not long after. Some time had passed since the sleepover, and Mary and Michelle were in Michelle's family kitchen when Mary said she was very troubled by something. She said she was worried that she had told Michelle way too much about the group. But then she added something really shocking. She said that she was wondering if it might be best for her to kill Michelle. Obviously shocked at this, Michelle turned around to confront her about this and was horrified to see that Mary was holding a kitchen knife in her hand and it was raised high. Michelle, in panic, reacted. She just grabbed whatever was nearby for protection. She managed to get her hands on the lid of a metal trash can, and she lifted it like it was a shield, and she swung this metal lid at Mary. But then she noticed that Mary was just cackling with laughter, saying it was all just a joke. But was it? Really? Michelle was just too disturbed by it all. The stories, the details that were shared at the weird sleepover, the Ouija board night, the thing moving on its own, it all just piled on top of each other, and now a threat, a direct threat of murder. That was enough. Michelle demanded that Mary get out of her house, and Mary did. She left. But this would not be the end of the story, not by a long shot. After the incident in the kitchen, Michelle didn't want to have anything to do with Mary anymore, understandably perhaps. The two of them ran into one another in the street in Lockhart. They spoke briefly, and Mary had lost none of her strangeness. She told Michelle that both the devil and the Thane, remember the leader of the group, had been speaking to her through the Ouija board again. The Thane and Satan had apparently commanded Mary that she had to return to Childress. Michelle was just relieved that Mary would soon be gone from Lockhart, because frankly, she was simply too scary to have around. A few days later, she chatted with Eddie, who confirmed that, yes, his cousin, Mary, had finally left town. She was gone. As the time went on that year, however, Michelle Gomez just started to worry. She couldn't get the feeling out of her head that the dreams Mary had shared might really have been based on actual events. And if that was true, did that mean Mary really had killed someone before, or at least been part of a group that had? Now, Michelle was a talented artist, so she started to make ink drawings of the scenes that Mary had described, including the boy being hit by the car and the house with the red porch light. It wasn't hard to recreate either, because Mary had given so much minute detail, a factor that made her think that this really was more than a dream. For example, she drew the last moments of this teenager who was supposedly called Tate, complete with a huge tree and a windbreak and two cotton farms. The scenes she drew were just not vague, they were very specific. Once she was done with these drawings, she decided to take them to the police station in Lockhart. By now, she was 18 years old. An investigator called Gerald Clough took her statement and looked at the pictures. He wrote up her concerns in a report and recorded for the record that she appeared like a very normal young woman, but he noted that Michelle Gomez was extremely concerned that this Mary Rayner would discover that she'd spoken to the police, and so she was scared. This did not appear to Clough like some sort of joke. The officer looked over her drawings as well, and he didn't record them in his report, but he was struck by them enough to send them over to the investigation team back in Childress. And what they came back with was unnerving. Quite a while passed before the Childress Police Department got back in touch with the Lockhart Sheriff's Office. They said that Michelle Gomez's drawings had a startling resemblance to actual places and events that had taken place both in and around Childress in Texas. For example, there really had been an abandoned home in a nearby town called Kirkland. The police confirmed that it did indeed have a distinctive red porch light, and it was known locally as the Haunted House. This house had recently burned down under suspicion of arson. That wasn't all. They also confirmed that a 15-year-old boy had been killed in a hit-and-run accident while walking home from his dishwashing job at a restaurant one night. This took place only a couple of blocks away from the house with the red porch light. Remember that Mary had said the two adults who killed that boy with the car owned that house? And yet there had been no arrests as no drivers had been found. And yet it was the drawing of the tree that really shocked the police. Michelle had drawn a scene of an actual place out of town to the north in Childress with a steep curved dirt road known locally as Box's Corner. And they confirmed that a 17-year-old body had been discovered there swinging from the branch of a horse apple tree, the toes of his sneakers just inches above the ground. He was found by his friend Chad Johnston, who rushed to the dead boy's parents to tell them. They hurried out to the tree and were horrified to see that it was true their son was dead. The father, Jimmy, cut him down while his mother couldn't do anything else but scream. The police confirmed that his name was Tate, the exact same name that Mary had said. Only they confirmed that his name was Tate Roland. Tate had died on that tree on July the 26th, 1988, which was only a couple of weeks before Mary Rayner moved to Lockhart that summer. Could Mary Rayner's claims of a child-murdering satanic cult really be true? Well, back in Childress, that was precisely what people were starting to suspect, because a series of events would unfold that would truly make many of them believe that the devil had come to their town. Join me next time as the story shifts from Lockhart, Texas, to the little town of Childress, where a series of shocking events would unfold that would cause many to believe that Mary Rayner's stories were not stories at all, and certainly not just dreams, but actual facts about a dark force creeping through the streets of this Texas town. That's next time. If you want another case of true crime, the paranormal, and so-called satanic cults, then check out my two-parter on Clophill called Unholy, The Church That Terrified a Nation. But until next time, keep an eye on the shadows, as they might just have their eyes on you. Good night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, Our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.